This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest. She shows up here about every year or so. Her name is Julie Weeks. She's the CEO of Women Able and womenable.com. Julie, welcome back to the show.
Great to talk to you again, Mark.
It's always a pleasure. Do me a favor and give us a background of Julie, and then let's talk about Women Able for a couple minutes.
Sure. My background is in market research and public policy. The arc of my career has been taking data and turning it into knowledge and action, and focusing on politics and public affairs and small business. After working for a market research firm for a while, I came to Washington and worked at the Small Business Administration, then a nonprofit research foundation focused on women's entrepreneurship. Then I was the executive director of the National Women's Business Council in D.C., and from which I launched my business, Women Able, 8 years ago, which works with the stewards of women's entrepreneurship, like governments, corporations, international organizations like the World Bank, studying the challenges that women business owners face and try to make the infrastructure better for startups and growth.
Right. So you were in D.C. back in the days like when Valerie Perlowitz and a couple other people started Women in Technology.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the evolution of women in government contracting, or women's issues in business first, then let's mm-hmm. get down to government contracting.
Well, certainly when I first started at the Office of Advocacy and then at the Center for Women's Business Research, the initial trend or the push of the women's business movement was just to get recognized in total and just in general. And, you know, this year is the 25th anniversary of the Women's Business Ownership Act of 1988, which really put women's entrepreneurship on the map. And it started with just counting and making sure we actually knew how many women-owned firms there were, what kind of challenges they were facing. And, you know, from a public policy point of view, early on it was, let's help women get into business. And really now it's shifted quite a bit to let's help women grow their businesses to the next level. And even though there's still a need to get more and more women into business, I mean, the emphasis has shifted to growth-oriented issues. And that includes market expansion, like selling to corporations, selling internationally, and selling to the federal government. So, I mean, that's where there's been a shift in emphasis and where, you know, women's business organizations themselves have been strong advocates for, you know, getting more federal policy attention on helping to generate more growth in women-owned businesses.
Okay, we were talking before the show about legislation regarding set-asides for women-owned businesses, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about what you have seen since that initial legislation up to today.
Well, the very initial legislation, to my recollection, was like 1994, when the 5% goal for federal government agencies to spend with women-owned small businesses was put in place in the first place. And, of course, since it's just a goal and there's really no punitive action that ever takes place, that goal government-wise has never been met, you know, which has been very frustrating to the women's business community. So there was legislation that was passed in the waning days of the Clinton administration that would have expanded and given federal agency procurement officials the ability to reserve procurements for women-owned small business and, you know, essentially then to set aside some needs of the agency and say, okay, we only like entertain bids from women-owned businesses. And even though that legislation passed, it was not implemented at all during the Bush administration, and so it was only at the beginning of the Obama administration that was then implemented. And even then, there was a rule about how many industries it would apply to. And would there be a cap on, the procurements that would be reserved for women-owned businesses? That cap was just recently lifted. SBA now has a women-owned small business procurement program that was, implemented sort of on paper, at least, at the beginning of 2011, and is just now kind of starting to get going and get some action. So, even though this has been an issue that's been a long time frustration for women-owned businesses, there's been, steady lobbying pressure by NABO, National Association of Women Business Owners, WIP, Women Impacting Public Policy, and others, the U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce as well. And so that relentless pressure has caused some positive action, although the benefits have yet to be seen, I would say.
Yeah. So the upshot of this interview is our first conversation three plus years ago. You were contacted by or retained by American Express, the Open group, to do a study on small business contracting.
Yes.
So, we had an interview on that first one. I believe we did one on the second one, and you're in your third study now. So, give us a little bit of an overview for this segment what you have seen. What are the highlights from the first study? How have that changed a little bit in mm-hmm. More recent?
Yes. First of all, these studies have been, it was 2010, 2011, and now in 2013, have been conducted among small businesses who are active federal contractors. So they have had a contract, whether a prime or a sub, within the last 5 years. So this is a fairly specialized population. So it's not a broad-based small business survey about, would you like to get into contracting? This is actually asking and querying those who have been and are most of whom are currently engaged in federal contracting, what's going on? How much are you investing in contracting? What trends are you seeing? What difficulties or challenges are you facing? That sort of thing. And because we really, wanted to know what to do to help business owners get more engaged in contracting, what kind of lessons learned could we pass along from those who are active to those who are just getting into it. So the first thing we did really was to ask a few questions that nobody knew the answer to, is what kind of an investment are small business owners making in seeking federal contracts? And that's, not just, airfare to go to meetings or whatever, but the time and attention that it takes to build relationships, to respond to proposals, to make bids, to do all that sort of thing. And then the 2010 survey found that on average, small business owners were investing a little over $86,000 a year in seeking federal contracts. That has gone up tremendously since then. The current survey shows that it's nearly $129,000 now, so a big jump in the investment that small businesses are having to make.
That's huge.
It is huge, and it's not just, that the price of postage has gone up. There's just a lot more time and attention that businesses are making. It's a 49% increase over the past 3 years, which is, pretty big, much, much bigger than inflation. We're also seeing at that same time that bidding activity has gone down. The number of bids that they're making over the course of, I think we asked over the course of 3 years because, a year-to-year things may change. In 2010, we asked over the previous 3 years, how many times have you submitted a bid for a prime federal contract, and that was 19.5 bids over 3 years. This year, we asked over the past 3 years, how many times have you bid for a prime contract, and it's 5.5, so it's a big drop as well. So, too, there's a drop in the number of bids they're participating on as a subcontractor. So they're making a higher investment in time, but it's resulting in fewer bids.
But, did you do any follow-up on that one to see if their win rate was any better?
Yes, actually. And the success rate is is better.
Well, hopefully they're too busy.
Well, the success rate is typically better in subcontracting than in prime contracting.
Right,
but
yeah.
What we call the batting average for prime contracts back in the 2007 to 2009 period was, you know, a 410 batting average. If you're a baseball player, that's pretty good. You know, it's less than half, but hey, it's 41% of the biz
mm-hmm.
are victorious. Now you've got a batting average of 545, so almost 55% success rate, so more than half. So there is this higher investment is perhaps resulting in, even though it's fewer bids, it's smarter bids, and success rates are not only holding firm in the midst of government spending declines, but it's actually getting better.
Cool. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to take a much deeper dive into not only the previous studies, but the current study that just came out. You can find Julie at womenable.com, all one word, womenable.com, and we'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Julie Weeks. Julie is the president, CEO, goddess of womenable.com. Please look at her site. Very cool information on all aspects of women in business, not just government contracting, but a lot of research there on all aspects of women-owned businesses. Julie, let's take a little one more pass at the spending, who's spending by gender, et cetera. So take it away.
All right. Well, we said in the last segment that overall the investment on seeking federal contracts has gone up substantially over the last 3 years. But just looking at this year, who's spending more time and effort and who's spending less effort? Not surprisingly, of course, larger firms are making a more significant investment because they are probably seeking larger contracts. Businesses that have more than 50 employees are investing over $250,000 a year seeking contracting opportunities where, as I said before, the average for all is a little under $129,000, so you know more than double. Whereas smaller firms are spending less. We have seen in this survey, similar to the other two surveys that have been conducted, that firms owned by people of color are having to invest more than average to seek federal contracts, you know, to get the same amount of work. In 2012, firms owned by people of color spent a little over $143,000 seeking federal contracts, again, compared to $129,000 on average. That gap is a little bit narrowing over the last three surveys, but where it's narrowing even more actually is among women-owned firms, which in all three surveys are seen to invest less than average. In 2012, women-owned firms invested $112,000 seeking federal contracting opportunities, which is about 8 out of every $10 spent by men-owned firms. However, that gap was a lot larger in previous surveys. So even though women are investing less, they're not investing as much less than they were 3 years ago. So there's higher investment being required by everybody to seek contracting opportunities. Digging out more information, attending more informational sessions and conferences, and the preparing of the proposals themselves. So there is a change over time, or growth over time among everybody. There's another interesting difference, not surprisingly, I suppose, regionally, that the Mid-Atlantic region is spending more. Typically, we saw in the past the Beltway region, which is the South Atlantic, would spend more. But this year, it's the Mid-Atlantic region. And at the other end of the spectrum, firms in the East-North-Central region, which is the Midwest where I'm located, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin, are investing the least amount of time and money seeking federal contracts. I don't know if that's because the opportunities are less there. and also by industry, we're seeing that, that small firms in the construction industry and in information services are among those spending the most time and money seeking contracts. Information services in particular, I know from some of the previous work we've done, they are seeking as much subcontracting activity as they are prime contracting activity. They're, the kinds of services that they supply can often be a part of a much larger, you know, whether it's a DOD-type contract and they're doing one piece of it. So there's a lot of subcontracting activity that, that information services businesses are engaged in.
Right, and for the information services contracts, if you're talking a large GWAC, it's not uncommon for several of the top 20 contractors, one to take a lead and then others to join the team.
Exactly.
You know, technically, they're subcontracting.
Yep, exactly. And, or, definitely with amongst each other. Yeah.
Right. So
the inbreeding continues. Contracts, I think they're more likely to be primes, but I'd have to go back and check on that. But
yeah, but in the construction industry, same kind of thing. There are some very, very big ones that are well ensconced in the market, and there's a lot of opportunity, particularly in the green building type activity in construction, I believe, for smaller firms to come into play.
I also know some women-owned construction firms that are very good at doing pieces of things. I think it's the San Francisco airport, when they just recently redid all the entryway flyovers and all the roads and bridges that went in and out. I believe a women-owned construction company did the concreting of that. So, you know, it's they're taking pieces of that kind of a you know, big contract to renovate an airport, and they're doing, you know, the road part of it or something.
Right. In a couple of the networking events that I attend, I've run across a number of women in the construction area as owners, as BD people. And in one instance, the president of a local chapter of one of the construction industry groups.
Probably that's Teresa Dayton.
Yeah. It could be. I don't remember her name, but in the Baltimore area. So, so the investments are going up. The bidding activities is slacking. What's the trade off here? Is there a higher win rate?
There is a higher win rate. Yes, I mean, and we ought to take one step back though and say that really part of what's driving this, of course, it's not just greater savvy and experience on the part of business owners, although that's certainly part of it, but the overall trend in government spending, as we all know, is down. You know, reductions of federal spending, you know, whether mandatory or otherwise, but then the contract spending has gone down. There's been, just in the past 4 years, a 5% reduction in spending on external contracts. So, you know, that's perhaps forcing business owners to be a little smarter, you know, than they might otherwise be. But, you know, definitely the investment going up, bidding activity down substantially, but success rates actually increasing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the savvy's up, and for the listeners, keep in mind what Julie said at the beginning. This survey was done among current government contractors. This is not a newbie survey,
right? And it certainly also does not capture in any way any level of discouragement. You know, if somebody was an active contractor 5 or more years ago, but they just found it so hard that they're not engaged in it anymore, they're not in the universe of the businesses we're talking to.
Yeah,
so that's an entirely separate issue that, you know, that may well be happening. There may be fewer businesses seeking some of these contracts. However, we you know, in another question we asked in this survey, you know, is it getting easier or harder to get contracts based on, you know, a couple of different trends, and more than half of the business owners are saying that it's getting harder to win contracts, actually, because there are more bidders for each opportunity. So I don't think, at least from the perspective of the business owners, they're not seeing the playing field clearing in any sense.
Yeah. Now, when you were doing the survey, was there any differentiation for IDIQ contracts like Seaport E? Are they winning that? But, you know, you can be on that contract as a prime, but mm-hmm. not necessarily get any business.
Right. No, we didn't get into that level of detail because this is a survey of just a little over 600 people, and there are so many different kinds of contract vehicles that we would never be able get enough of a cell size, you know, enough cases doing this kind of contract versus another. So we haven't ever dived down to that level of detail. The only thing we're doing is, you know, what share of the contracts that you're getting are, you know, prime, sole prime in which you are subbing out to other people, you're a subcontractor, or you're a member of a team. You know,
okay.
So we didn't get into individual contract vehicles.
Cool. You are listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest, Julie Weeks, will be back with me after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest, Julie Weeks, is the president of WomenAble.com. Please go to her site. There's just a ton of really good information there. The American Express site where you can get this report is openforum.com/government-contracting. This is an American Express study done by Julie for over 3 years now, right?
That's correct, yes.
Cool. So let's get back into the meat of this thing. Page 4 of the report, active contractors are bidding smarter. How active? What do you mean by an active contractor?
Yeah, the definition just to get a business into this survey was that they had to have performed on a contract within the past 5 years. So not necessarily that they had to be active today, but we found that the vast majority of these contractors are currently performing on a contract. And in fact, we asked how many they're performing on, just out of curiosity, and on average 2.5 contracts they're juggling at in this given moment. So the number of them grows a little bit with experience. If you have more contracting experience, perhaps you have a larger business then, and so, you know, those who've been in contracting for 10 or more years have 3 active contracts going, but on currently, you know, 3/4 of those who meet our criteria for active contractor are performing, and on average, it's 2.5 contracts each. It's interesting that minority-owned firms are more active. Those who do have contracts have 3.2 contracts. There's no difference by gender. So just kind of interesting to see who's performing and how many are they able to juggle at one time.
Yeah, the other aspect of this, and you had mentioned this to me earlier offline, is that the companies are apparently less reliant now on federal than maybe in the initial survey.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another one of the really eye-opening findings. We asked in our inaugural survey in 2010 what their percentage of revenues from the previous year, meaning 2009, what percentage of their sales came from, you know, a whole variety of groups. And these active contractors at the time, 38% of their revenues were coming from the federal government, another 11% from state or local government. So nearly half of their revenue was coming from public sector contracting. Now, when we asked this year what percentage of their sales came from federal contracting and everything else, it's only 19% coming from federal government, so a decline from 38% to 19%, so that's half. A very stark decline. About the same, not too much of a change, a little bit up actually in state or local governments, but still that's from, you know, going to almost half of the revenue coming from public sector employment to just over a third. Businesses are having to diversify and juggle their revenues from a whole lot of variety of customers. They're not as reliant on Uncle Sam for for their government, for their total revenue anymore.
Mm-hmm. So there was another factor that I found interesting, your weeding out process. Companies that may have registered to do business with the government, but what? Never got around to it.
Well, we started out with just everybody who's registered on SAM. That was our sampling frame, because those are the people who would be active if they were active. And, you know, if they had not performed on a contract within the last 5 years, then they were kicked out, as not being active. But we asked them, you know, why they're not active, essentially, just because we wanted to know if they were frustrated, they have been registered and they're just trying, or, why aren't they active contractors? And over half of them said that they were just getting started and just learning the ropes, so they're very new to the process, and as we all know, the first step is getting registered. And so, half of the people that we had kicked out for not being active is because they just got started. Another third, a little over a third, said that they've registered on SAM in case an opportunity comes down the road, but they weren't really actively seeking contracts. And it's really only 6% who are saying that they have been just beating their heads against the wall for years without success. And another very small amount, I think 3%, said that they had some contracts in the past, so they used to be active, but just they're in a lull period at the moment and they're not as active. So that was kind of interesting because there's a lot of talk about how onerous and hard the process is, but really a lot of these folks are just getting started and there's not a huge share that have just been trying without success. So I suppose that's encouraging.
Well, let's go back to the initial stats then, that on average now $128,638 is being spent in time, materials, research, and cash, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any anecdotal or hard evidence that these companies that are spinning their tires or beating their heads against the wall, is their spend lower? Do we know?
The ones no, we don't know, actually, because if they're not then active contractors, so we don't know.
So we don't know.
Don't know what they have spent,
yeah.
Unsuccessfully. No, we don't know that. We do know, though, that in general, even though they're investing more and bidding less, that their success rates are higher. Although, as we just said, the share of revenue annually in the businesses from federal government is lower. So on average, while they're investing more and being more successful, because they're bidding less frequently, then that means they're winning less frequently. You know, even though their success rate is up, it's a smaller base and a smaller, numerator and denominator. So they're, overall they're being successful, but active contractors are not as active today as they were 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so but the gene pool here is fairly large. So,
yeah.
In areas where there is significant cluster of governmental activity, particularly here in the Central East Coast,
mm-hmm.
We see more companies that are totally immersed into the market.
Yes.
This sample goes coast to coast.
Yes, it does.
Probably in. Two states that aren't coast to coast,
right? Yep, because it includes Alaska and Hawaii for
yeah.
sure.
So what do you draw from this? I mean, what are they going to have to do to play? If the companies that register on SAM that are not doing anything or beating their heads against the wall, what are they doing wrong?
Well, I think if they've registered on SAM and think that some kind of gravy train is going to start heading their way and that stuff will land in their lap, then, I think they'll find out very quickly that that's not the case. You know, as folks say, that getting on SAM and also getting whatever certifications or, that you can get is really just a license to hunt, and you still have to
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of information gathering you need to do. Certainly a lot of the advice that we've gotten from our surveys in the past, you know, if you knew then what you know now, what would you do? Most of the time they say, I would have gotten started earlier in my business, because sometimes people think, well, I've got to wait until I'm at some certain revenue level before going. But no, not really. I mean, there's still, even though larger, more experienced businesses probably would do better, there's still a lot of very small firms that are active federal contractors. So, you know, you don't have to be a $1 million business to get into this.
To do it.
You don't have to be in business, you know, for 10 or more years. We've got, I'm just looking it up now, we've got 40% of active contractors have been in business for less than 10 years. So these are not old
businesses. Firms, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people will get started in business with an eye to federal agencies as customers from the start. And that could be just as successful as kind of growing your business in the private sector before going into the public sector. But another piece of advice that we've gotten a lot is...
Let's dive into this on the next side in our last segment.
Bet.
You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back wrapping up our discussion on what it takes for small businesses to win after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm with Julie Weeks today. Julie is the president of Women Able. You can find her at womenable.com. You can find the study that we've been discussing, the trends in federal contracting for small business from American Express Open, at openforum.com/government contracting. Julie, I'm thinking back. I saw the first report now, three and a half years ago. And what really got my attention was you were statistically validating things that those of us in the market who are not smoking mirrors were saying, that it took 12 to 24 months to win business. You came up with 19 and a half, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. It was at the time, and it's up a little bit. But yes, quantifying what it takes was a key component of this survey.
Exactly. But you know, the other cool thing that really grabbed my attention was the investment that companies had to make. So, and that obviously has gone up. So it's not a game for the faint of heart. It's not a game, as you said earlier, for those thinking that they can sign up on some nebulous website and have a gravy train show up in a week. And we were talking during a break about the geographic issue here.
Mm-hmm.
You surveyed, you know, it plays much less of a role than a lot of people think.
That's certainly true. I mean, I think there's a misconception that, you know, unless you're located in the Capital Beltway area of the country, that, you know, there isn't any federal contracting opportunity, but that's just not the case. I mean, there's, you know, the vast majority of the businesses that are active federal contractors are not in the D.C. metropolitan area. There are federal government office buildings and federal installations all over the country. So even though, of course, the kind of the geographic magnetic center of things is the Washington, D.C. area, but no, as federal contracting goes on all around the country, and indeed, you know, a lot of federal contractors are also doing work internationally, you know, for federal activities that are happening abroad. So it's not just D.C. for sure.
Yeah, and as we were also discussing during the break, there's 28 cities outside, not including Washington, D.C., that have a federal executive board, and these only occur when there is a significant cluster of federal activity around a major metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
And that indicates to me that there's 28 cities outside of D.C. that are, you know, they got to spend some money. You know, there's going to be contracts to be had.
Absolutely. And Mark, how many PTACs are there around the country, too? Those
92, 93, something like that.
Yeah, so for anybody listening who, you know, is interested, you're not in D.C., those procurement technical assistance centers are there to help for sure.
Yeah, and they're usually aligned either with a small business development center or a university, but the people there can help you get started in contracting. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the relationship side, because in your first survey, I believe you touched on this.
The first and the second, we had several different questions, and we were asking in the very first survey about lessons learned, and one of them was to not be so scattershot in your approach to, agencies. It's to spend the time and focus and develop relationships within agencies. Meet and learn from your OSDBU, your Office of Small Disadvantaged Business Utilization. Meet some of the people who are those who are listing the contracts, the offices that would be utilizing the goods or services that you're providing. You got to find out what their needs are and go to any of the information sessions or matchmaking events that they hold. Developing those relationships are very important.
Yeah. It's weird because I've discussed this in both of my books on the government contracting universe, and in much more detail in the latest, and it amazes me that people still don't understand the value that brings to the table.
And it's not that government contracting is any different from any other new endeavor or new market you're going to go into. You always want to develop relationships and learn what the customer needs. So it shouldn't be any different for government contracting.
Exactly. So in any discipline, there is an inner circle, and there's an inner circle for the skill involved and the industry involved.
Mm-hmm.
And where those two circles overlap is where you want to migrate to.
Absolutely. And I would add about relationships that it's not just developing relationships with the purchaser, the government agency, but learn about other people that are working with that agency, a prime contractor, whereas perhaps if you got to know them, you could be a subcontractor with them,
mm-hmm.
or learn up from other small business owners, not necessarily competitors in your space with that particular agency, but other business owners that are engaged in federal contracting, and you can learn a lot of tips and kind of the skills and the relationship tricks, I suppose you could say, but then also just any insights as to when the timing of something might be, or procurement coming down the road or something. So developing relationships with peers and with potential primes to be a sub are also very important. So it's not just the relationship with the agency.
Yeah, and to develop these, I have some clients that work for the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, and Baltimore-based businesses. They're physically located near the client,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you got to find some venues to network with your peers, and they were saying, well, we've looked around, we couldn't find one. I said, start one, host a reception, and they did, and they had 30 CEOs show up, mm-hmm. other small businesses that want to do business or are currently doing business with Center for Medicare and Medicaid. Hello. You throw out some coffee and donuts and you send out some invitations.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the appetite for that is huge. That people need and crave that kind of, it's companionship at one sense, but it's also just, networking and learning. I mean, it's very important.
Well, give us some final tips here. Any takeaways from this study, previous studies, or, you've been doing this a while. You've got some significant knowledge behind you here.
Well, I think the results are should definitely say that one of the key pieces of advice is that this takes time. It takes time and effort. You ask active federal contractors, though, if it's worth it, and they say yes. But if they knew now, now what they knew then, they would have started earlier. So even though it's hard work and it takes an investment, a significant investment on an annual basis of time and attention, it really does work. So, I mean, the number one piece of advice is take the time to really invest in knowledge gathering, relationship building. Number two, I would say it's focus. That one of the key lessons learned from those who tried and failed and tried and failed and then they've succeeded is that, they didn't focus enough. They went to too many agencies at the beginning, kind of asking, what is it that you need? I'll sell it to you, as opposed to really focusing in on who really needs the products and the services that you have to offer. And thirdly, I guess I would say share those lessons learned. I mean, there are still others that are out there struggling, and you can work with them you could subcontract to them. I mean, there's a lot of activity of small businesses that we are sized out of, if you could say that, through bundling or very
sure.
large contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I think we quite often, expect there to be some legislation breaking this up, but we also need to do an effort ourselves, we small business owners, to help one another. And, you don't succeed by yourself, and so we should pass that along and try to bring along another business owner that you've met along the way that maybe you can together team on something. Or you can sub a piece of a project out with them. So I would say, don't go it alone and share your success with others.
Julie, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. And I know you've got a couple more studies coming out shortly, so I'm sure you'll be back soon.
I certainly hope so, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining me. You can find Julie at womenable.com. You can find the American Express study at openforum.com/government contracting. I also suggest you look up Julie on LinkedIn. You can look me up on LinkedIn. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize the power of LinkedIn or your government marketing program needs to be fine-tuned, give me a call. Drop me a line at federalmark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.